So, you didn't get my warm greetings before you recorded. Welcome to Baldwin Hills. This will be the coolest we are today. Hope everybody hydrates and stays as cool as they can. Welcome to the meeting of the Board of Recreation and Parks Commission. Today is October 3rd, 2024. This board meeting is being conducted in person. All public comments will be taken in person only, and each speaker will be granted a maximum of 2 minutes. Our first order of business is a call for the roll. Takesha, can you please take the roll?
Will do, Madam President. President Cimarron.
Present.
Vice President Sanchez.
Present.
Commissioner Hutton.
Present.
Commissioner Tran.
Present.
Commissioner Lloyd.
Present.
And we have quorum, Madam President.
Thank you. Our next item of business is approval of the minutes from the September 19th, 2024 meeting. May I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
May I have a second?
Second.
Takesha, we have a motion and a second. Can you call for the vote?
Will do, Madam President. We have a motion and a second to approve the regular minutes of September 19, 2024. Vice President Sanchez, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Tran, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Hutton, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Lloyd, how do you vote?
Aye.
President Cimarron, how do you vote?
Aye.
And the motion carries.
Thank you. And with that, we'll move on to the General Manager's update. Jim Kim.
Good morning, President Cimarron, Commissioners, staff, and members of the public. Jimmy Kim, General Manager. I'm going to bring up Ramon Cerrillos, Principal Recreation Supervisor 2, for the introduction of staff and the facility. Thank you.
Oh, welcome.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us here at beautiful Baldwin Hills. Good morning, Recreation and Parks Commissioners, public and staff. My name is Ramon Cerrillos, and I am the Principal Recreation Supervisor 2 for the West Region. Juan Soto is the Principal Recreation Supervisor 1. Maddie Gutierrez oversees the district here in Viewpoint. It also includes Baldwin Hills Rec Center. The other supervisors in the West Region are Courtney Norris, oversees Coastal District, Leslie Richter, who oversees Community Service Program, CSP program, and citywide buses. It's our pleasure to introduce you to the dedicated individuals who make the programs facilities come to life here at Baldwin Hills. We have a diverse and talented team, field staff, maintenance personnel that collectively efforts play an integral part in shaping the vibrant recreational landscape and provide a perfect community here in Baldwin Hills. Here at the park, we have Lucinda Jeter as the city director, two recreation coordinators, which is Casey Stokes and Conrad Jones. yeah, there. I've been around here. All right. We have a great maintenance staff behind the scenes, that, as you can see, the facility is spotless. Beautiful baseball fields out there, perfectly manicured. One of the best baseball diamonds in the whole city, I believe. So they keep it up, and so the folks that do the maintenance here, we have Superintendent Raul Leon, Construction and Maintenance Supervisor Scott Bachman, Principal Grounds Maintenance Supervisor Robert Buonanotro, Senior Park Maintenance Supervisor Leo Floyd, Park Maintenance Supervisor Jose Lopez, and Lead Senior Nikki Jordan. Some of the things that are provided here at Baldwin Hills, as you can see, this beautiful basketball gym named after Mr. Will Chamberlain, one of the greatest Lakers ever. But they're also a big baseball program outside. Currently, they are excelling in a couple of the sports and classes here for the fall, and they have a real big GPLA program in volleyball and also a very good program in flag football, which is an up-and-coming sport again here for our department. So thank you very much for joining us here.
And thank you for all that your staff and your team does to keep this asset beautiful and engaging with the community.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Ramon. Moving on, a couple of highlights from the department. Currently, we are supporting the citywide cooling center activation that started October 1st till today, October 3rd. So we remind the listening public as well as public here, if you're looking for places of refuge from the heat, our cooling centers are activated. You can visit laparks.org for a list of all of our cooling centers. In addition, I wanted to remind everybody that all of our public facing facilities, rec centers, libraries, and even just any public counter is available for refuge from the heat. So if you need a place to cool off, be sure to check out one of those locations. I also wanted to make note that this Saturday, October 5th, We're having our grand opening of our 10th community school park at Garden Grove Elementary School from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. With the mayor's office, council member Nithya Raman, and board member Nick Melvoin. By way of background, the CSP program is part of our mission to increase community access to walkable parks and open spaces within a half mile or 10 minute walk from their homes. It's a tool that we continue to utilize with our relationship with LAUSD and utilizes LAUSD properties as parks to help wrap fill all the gaps in the city where park access is limited. Couple of general updates. The department has received multiple communications from the public through our board office. Those communications have been assigned to appropriate staff for response. In addition to that, I did want to follow up on the Rancho Park request for report back. The Tavern at Rancho Park LLC, Mr. Greg Plummer, who is the owner that's facilitating Tavern at Rancho LLC, is optimistic that their financing will come through. But Rec and Park concession staff is working with the executive staff as well as finance and the city attorney on developing options that we can take to help maybe have a direct investment and restructuring the agreement in case those financials do not come through. We should have details on those options by the next task force meeting on the third week of October. I'll pause if there's any questions for that.
So when he says the financing on Rancho Park looks good under the current lease agreement, concession agreement terms, he thinks the financing will come through?
Matt?
Matthew Rudnick, executive officer. There's optimism that the financing that the operator is seeking will be available through a loan. If that does not happen at this, in parallel to that, we're looking at other options. It may include the current agreement or looking at, again, other options based on the terms of the agreement. The task force that met last meeting explored some of those issues. So we have a variety of options, but we want to be proactive in planning. We're optimistic and hopeful that the relationship with the current operator can continue, but we also are looking at options available to us.
I appreciate that. And I know at our last meeting, we had a lot of public testimony on this, and the neighborhood and the residents are very frustrated. So when do we anticipate having a timeline of when financing will be in place and when we can get back to completing the project? Because I think we owe that to the community to give them a little bit more certainty.
Yeah, we're working on providing an update back to the board and to the members of the public and to the council office this month that should give us a better estimate depending on what option is available and we pursue in terms of when construction can begin. But the idea is to try to get an update and certainty on a better timeline on the go forward in the next few weeks.
So is our thank you, I appreciate that. Is our team who handles concession from a staff perspective, are we meeting? I mean, it seems that we should be meeting with the concessionaire, you know, sitting out, hammering out what are the options as opposed to being two parallel independent paths. Because if the financing doesn't fall through and then we're not having conversation with the concessionaire about those alternatives, that's only going to delay the process of having to theoretically come and amend the concession contract. So I would think we'd want to put some urgency on this and to sit with the concessionaire. And if one of the concession task force members, you know, is able to join that conversation to be able to really move this forward to find a solution, I think that would be a better course of action.
Yeah, I think we put on the task force meeting 2 weeks ago, we put out, I just want to acknowledge staff. There was a high sense of urgency that was placed on this, and the sense of urgency was directing them to meet with the concessionaire immediately to work through what were the financing options. What did he needed to do to shore up the financing with the contract terms that are in place? or for us to concurrently look at creative options. If he cannot do it, we were really clear that we want to be able to figure out a way to help that concessionaire if we can, or concurrently come up with other creative options, like I said, with a sense of urgency. I feel like staff heard that message and are working forward with it. Matthew, if you need somebody to sit in on any of those meetings, I'm happy to do. But I think we walked away from that meeting with pretty clear marching orders and wanted to assure, because we did have a number of very concerned citizens that use that crown jewel, as we discussed quite a bit.
No. Okay, thank you for that, Commissioner Hutton.
Thank you, Matt. We're going to go ahead and move on to the South LA wetlands update. So the department, we met with the council office as well as the mayor's office to implement a strategy that we will be operationalizing on October 13th. We'll be assigning maintenance staff to provide cleaning of the park 7 days a week from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., really prioritizing the cleaning of the portable restrooms that are there now. Currently, the park doesn't have or we're replacing all of the outdated park operation hours. So we'll be posting operational hours from the park is open from 5 a.m. to 10:30. So we'll be posting those operating hours throughout the park. We'll be assigning on the 13th as well, unarmed security to close the gates at 10:30, and they'll monitor the park until 2 a.m. in the morning, 7 days a week. We're also piloting the installation of 10 solar lighting with new technology. So we're piloting there over at South LA Wetlands. The lights have been ordered, and so we're expecting a leeway time of about 12 weeks, and we should have those lights in and operational before the end of the year. We've already installed two in the parking lot area to give it some lighting in the immediate, so that they could also support the maintenance operations that are going to be there, as well as for the security officers that's going to be assigned from 10 to 12. We're also going to be bringing to the board for approval on moving forward with a master plan and an environmental impact report on the future use of the wetlands. So that report will be coming in a future board meeting. That concludes my report for the South LA Wetlands. I'll pause if there's any questions. Thank you. And finally, I'm going to bring up Mr. Gary Singer, our superintendent of Citywide Aquatics and our Emergency Management Division, to recognize Mr. Tom Jones for his 53 years of service. I see him in the audience now, so wow. If you would like to come up and stand next to our superintendent, thank you.
Good morning, Commission. My name is Gary Singer. I'm the new superintendent over emergency management and aquatics, and I'm honored to be here today to celebrate and recognize Tom Jones for his 53 years of service to the city. As the person with probably the least time in the department, it feels both an honor and somewhat ironic to be recognizing someone with probably the most time in the department. So to get to know him better, I arranged a meeting, and despite just welcoming a new grandson last week, that morning, he still came in and made time to meet with me. When Tom was describing his career to me, it was honestly amazing to hear the depth of his experiences. He had an internal drive that could have made him successful in anything that he did, and we're just lucky that he chose aquatics. Tom's contributions have deeply enriched our community, creating inclusive opportunities and impacting lives across the city. Whether through his work in adaptive sports or other initiatives, Tom's legacy is a testament to his far-reaching influence. One thing that stood out to me during our conversation was the pride Tom felt in his work. He lit up as he shared stories of the programs he helped establish and the people he supported. It was clear that his work wasn't just something that he did, but something that gave him great purpose. That pride, the way he spoke about his accomplishments, really highlighted just how much this work meant to him. One of the things that comes to mind when I think of Tom's legacy is our slogan, Park Proud. Anytime I hear that phrase, I'm going to picture Tom. He exemplifies what it truly means to be Park Proud through his dedication, his initiatives, and his unwavering commitment to our community. Tom is the embodiment of Park Proud. So thank you, Tom, for your unwavering dedication and for setting an inspiring example for all of us. At this time, I'd like to present you with a citation on behalf of General Manningham and the Commission, and it reads as follows. Resolution upon retirement, this citation is presented to Tom Jones. Whereas, Tom Jones has dedicated 53 years of service to aquatics, starting from the Westchester Pool, where he became a junior lifeguard, swim team member, water polo player, and participated in paddleboard routines during water shows. On June 6, 1971, Tom began his formal service in aquatics as a citywide supply lifeguard, working out of the swim stadium, and becoming involved in special programs, and joining both the clown diving team and traveling water shows. Anybody remember those?
Only by pictures, but...
And whereas Tom Jones has managed numerous pools, including Paxton, which is now Richie Valens, Stoner, Mar Vista, before being assigned to Van Nuys Sherman Oaks Pool from 1980 to the year 2000. And Tom Jones was trained as a patrol guard at Lake Crowley in the summer of 1977. He became aquatic director in 1984 at Van Nuys Sherman Oaks, supervised by LA 84, and contributed by securing a $250,000 grant for equipment through the Pepsi program, enabling the purchase of equipment for the citywide adapted aquatic program. And whereas Tom Jones established strong programs in Learn to Swim, swim teams, and private lessons at Mar Vista and Van Nuys Sherman Oaks pools, and during his career recruited lifeguards to support the citywide adapted aquatic program, helping to train lifeguards in life-saving, first aid, and CPR skills. And whereas Tom Jones has been instrumental in teaching CPR and first aid during the off-season to Department of Water and Power staff and recreation centers, and contributed greatly to the overall safety and efficiency of aquatics programs through his work with lifeguard training and evaluation. And whereas Tom Jones has been a strong advocate for community engagement, encouraging year-round personnel to serve as ambassadors to his communities, fostering outreach to local schools, and recognizing the importance of water safety and swimming skills to the public. And whereas Tom Jones has built a family legacy within aquatics, with his daughters following in his footsteps as junior lifeguards, synchronized swimmers, and lifeguards, with two daughters becoming synchro coaches and judges, and with his spouse providing consistent support throughout the years. And whereas Tom Jones has fostered a spirit of camaraderie and professionalism, working under many supervisors and making lifelong friendships while maintaining the vision that aquatics programs must serve the community with a focus on safety, skill development, and program responsibility. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Recreation and Park Commissioners commend Tom Jones for his 53 years of distinguished service, leadership, and dedication to aquatics, and congratulates him on his retirement, wishing him and his family all the best in the future. And be it further resolved that the City of Los Angeles Department of Recreation and Parks pledges to continue Tom Jones's legacy of community engagement, water safety, and robust aquatics programs, ensuring that future generations benefit from the programs and services he helped to create. Signed by the General Manager of Department of Recreation and Parks, Jimmy Kim, and the President of the Board of Commissions. Thank you, Tom.
Well, what can I say? It's been a great journey. And as I've said many times, you know, success is a journey and not a destination. So now I'm just on another chapter and moving forward on that journey. I think one of the things I'd like to say to add to that history is I worked 37 years with LAUSD and retired from Monroe High School as an assistant principal a while ago. But it was great. But aquatics has just been exceptionally a major part of my life. And the people that I've met and served and the number of individuals that have come through the pools and have learned to swim. I didn't bring my red shorts today, but a comment I would get when I would go down to Ralph's was, gee, Mr. Jones didn't recognize you with clothes on. Or going to Home Depot and, of course, seeing students that I had at the high school. And so those are just real wonderful sort of activities that come about. And I'm going to miss aquatics, but I did tell some of the supervisors that, you know, call me. I have no problem in coming down and offering a little bit of guidance or suggestions. How many of you have been to or learned to swim at our pools? That away. You know, just yesterday, my brother sent me a link to a little autistic kid, and I guess he was up north. But the parents, after some time and not knowing where he was, they sent out, they called the police. They did a neighborhood walk through or run through to find him. And the little guy was found in the neighbor's backyard swimming pool. But fortunately, because of the skills that he learned with the safety skills, he was floating on his back, which is a major safety skill that everyone has to learn as we move through the skills of learning to swim. And he was good. He was okay. And they attribute it to the fact that that was one of the things. He took swim lessons, and they taught him how to float on his back when he got tired. So, you know, kids just know, or people just don't know that water has mass. And we have so many waterfronts in L.A. close to us, even, you know, the L.A. River, or which is one we always hear Swift Water Rescue going to, because people just get out and get trapped and don't know what to do with the water. So this is one of the visions I know that aquatics is working towards or working through. And it is a vital resource for the community. And I certainly hope that you take that into your minds and hearts to know that, you know, aquatics is important. And if you've ever been into a situation where you've seen a victim that really needed help, you know, it was through the aquatics that we are able to address those situations and come out with a positive ending. So I know I could go on and on, but I'll give you a break and say thank you very much. This is great. As Gary said, you know, my wife would be here, but we do have he's now 10 days old and a 2-year-old brother that we have at home that we're taking care of. So that's part of the new chapter. So again, thank you very much.
Well, Tom, thank you. Thank you for your commitment, your 53 years of service, your dedication, and for the legacy that you've left to this park and to this city.
Thank you.
Always gotta be.
And that concludes the general manager update. Thank you so much.
What a way to end the general manager's update, Jimmy. Thank you. With that, we'll move on to general public comment. Takesha, will you please conduct the general public comment?
Will do, Madam President. I will call the first three constituents to come up to the podium to make a public comment. You will be granted a maximum of 2 minutes. And if you have further comments, you may send them to our RAP inbox at rap.commissioners@lacity.org. May I have F. Claudio Bavell and Karen Flanagan.
First of all, good morning. The reason I'm here, I need to address the issue at the Jackie Robinson Obama Recreation Center. I'm here to ask you guys to help the employees and help the residents to make sure that the park can be kept in a good maintenance situation. And as you know, that one of the supervisors got stabbed at the park. And what I'm saying to you, I want you to document this date. I keep saying it over and over again. Somebody's going to die at that particular facility. It's just a matter of time. Because why? I see a lot. I have stopped a lot. I had a chance to stop some incidents in regards to the employees that work at the park, especially the ladies that clean the bathrooms. I've seen danger, a lot of things. I'm just saying, ask, help the management at the park and the employees with whatever they need. That way, everyone can actually stay safe. Does it come to the park? They go to the pool. It's not so the environment that hangs. And all I'm saying that the back road to come to the prayer to that back road is bad condition. Jackie Robinson situation. A lot of seniors go out there, try to walk, whatever. I see a lot of home. You know, see a lot. See danger. Why? Because I'm a retired police car mechanic and I learn a lot working police officers. So all I'm saying to you guys, I want you to document this date, October 3rd, 2024. Somebody is going to die at that park if you don't bring the necessary protection for the seniors, the employees, anyone who works at the park. It's just a matter of time. Mark my word on that. It's coming. And that's all I have to say to you guys. So help the employees, help the maintenance people. Don't blame maintenance. Don't blame the employees. Don't blame the supervisors that manage that park.
Thank you for your time. Thank you.
And do what you can.
Commissioners, I am here to talk about Riverside Bridge Home over in Griffith Park. This is probably the last time you'll hear from me. I submitted a letter with pictures of the interior of the Bridge Home shelter, the structure itself, deterioration, and the conditions within that facility. I know that right now that there is a license that gives way to the lease on the Bridge Home shelter, but a license is not a memorandum of understanding. And there needs to be a tightened up agreement between for Rec and Parks Protection, actually, as you have people assisting the homeless as the vendor operating that facility. Currently, the Riverside Bridge Home, it still lacks transparency and accountability, in my estimation, from all the research that I've done over 2.5 years. Yesterday, I was in federal court before Judge David O. Carter, and the auditor, A&M, for the LA Alliance settlement, told our councilwoman, Mrs. Rahman, that the conditions that they discovered in the Bridge Home shelter during an audit, they basically stopped short of calling it fraud in the way that the money is transferred over to the vendor. Rec and Parks receives absolutely no benefit from that transfer of funds. And there are still innumerable issues related to the shelter, on the exterior of the shelter and also on the interior of it. So again, I'm emphasizing the need for a memorandum of understanding, and that also just to give you an update there. I talked to Mrs. Rahman's staff yesterday as well. There is no ambassador program in place, as was agreed would happen in June of 2024. So that was what, back several months ago at this point. And we need the ambassador program that Mrs. Rahman had suggested brought live. And I'm advocating again for a performance and managerial audit of the shelter, as this commission has laid forth.
Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam President, I do not have any further requests for general public comments.
Thank you. Hearing none, let's move to public comment on board reports. Can you conduct public comment from constituents who are present today to give comment on a specific board report item, Takesha?
I will begin by taking public comments from constituents who are present today at our meeting. If you have further comments, you may send them to our RAP inbox at rap.commissioners@lacity.org. I'm going to have David Card come up.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm David Card. I'm a member of the Park Advisory Board at Pacific Palisades Rec Center and a longtime advocate and advisor on the Potrero Park, now part of that rec center. I wanted to thank you for hearing a proposal to improve the bathrooms in the old gym built in the 1950s. Hardly improved at all since then, and it's long overdue, and thank you, and I hope you unanimously support that. The president asked last meeting why the parking lot at Palisades Rec Center was full with so few people apparent in the playgrounds, and the answer is because we're right next to the business district, and everybody who shops and works in the business district, including the Catholic school kitty corner from the park and the library in the park, come and park there. Nobody is turned away from the rec center because they can't find parking, because there is parking in the street and people find a way to get there. And it is crowded during peak times. We just are adjusted to it. As part of the Potrero project, we added 23 parking spaces in the turning circle that was not used for programs at all. So that's 23 extra. When the bridge gets built over PCH connecting the park to the beach, there is a huge parking lot at the beach that's never full except on the major holidays. And that will provide two-way access for the general public to come not only directly to the park, but also park at the beach and walk over the bridge and up to the park. And that's something that we're looking forward to and has $11 million from the state to fund. The other thing is that with that bridge, we should be a regional park because Recon Parks owns the Potrero Canyon and Temescal Canyon and all the land in between. So we're a big park. Thank you. And I'm looking forward to the Olympics. Five generations of the Card family have attended the three Olympics in LA, and hope you do something great. Thank you.
Madam President, we do not have any further requests for board report public comments.
Thank you, Takesha. With that, in my commissioner's consent, I'd like to take the following reports on consent: item 24202, 24203, 24204, 205, 206, 209. So I'd like to take those items on consent. Do I have a motion to take those items on consent?
So moved. Second.
I have a motion and a second to take those items on consent. Takesha, can you call for the vote, please?
Will do, Madam President. We have a motion and a second to take the following board reports on consent: 24-202, 24-203, 24-204, 24-205, 24-206, and 24-209. Vice President Sanchez, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Hudson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Tran, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Lloyd, how do you vote? President Cimero, how do you vote?
Aye.
And the motion carried.
Thank you. And just for the public record, I'd like to note that item 208 was pulled from the agenda and item 210 will be continued for another meeting. So with that, our first item is 207.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm so sorry. I had a cold last week. Megan Luera, Planning, Maintenance, and Construction Branch, here to present Board Report 24-207. Board Report 24-207 requests the board adopt the proposed public art policy as shown in Attachment 1 of the reports. RAP displays and is home to several pieces of public art throughout the city, which includes, but is not limited to, murals, sculptures, monuments, plaques, and other artwork. The public art on RAP property is usually installed via one of the following mechanisms: as part of the city's permanent art collection, as part of the Percent for Public Art program, or the Public Works Improvements Art program per LACC or LA, or sorry, LAAC 19-85, as part of previously installed art on property that was donated to RAP, and then also via unsolicited proposals from the public, council offices, nonprofits, or other agencies. Artwork installed on RAP property requires RAP board approval. However, there are numerous examples of artwork that have been installed on RAP property without RAP's permission and or board approval. RAP does not currently have a board adopted policy as it pertains to public art. It should be noted that the installation, maintenance, display, and preservation of public art is not directly within RAP's current mission or staff's expertise. Objectively, RAP Parkland has become a repository for memorial plaques and other monuments that have limited or no connection to the parks in which they are located, and the maintenance, upkeep, and repair of the public art requires an ever increasing amount of staff time and resources. So just to briefly highlight Department of Cultural Affairs' role in public art on RAP property. So per authority granted under the administrative code, the Department of Cultural Affairs is responsible for the conservation and preservation of all paintings, documents, and records in possession of the City of Los Angeles. And DCA oversees the city's permanent art collection, and the Board of Cultural Affairs commissioners must approve any installation of artwork that is permanent on city property. Any artwork that is part of the permanent art collection or the Percent for Public Art program are overseen by the Department of Cultural Affairs, and all of those costs related to maintenance and restoration of those artworks are the responsibility of the Department of Cultural Affairs. So as previously noted, RAP has no adopted public art policy. RAP regularly receives unsolicited proposals from outside entities for the installation of public artwork on city parkland, and RAP staff has faced several challenges in regards to the maintenance, preservation, and removal of public art from RAP property. Challenges arise when there are no records about the approval of an installation and when there is no signed artist waiver on file, because the city runs the risk of violating an artist's rights that are protected by the Visual Artist Rights Act of 1990, and the California Art Preservation Act of 1979. Since there is no adopted policy, there are also no clear guidelines or rules to assist RAP staff when evaluating these proposals. This proposed art policy aims to specifically address unsolicited, community-driven art proposals. RAP will continue to partner with the Department of Cultural Affairs for installations that will be incorporated into the city's permanent art collection or installed as part of the Percent for Public Art program, both of which require RAP board approval, but will not be subject to this policy. The purpose of this policy is to protect RAP's assets, define RAP's role in the public art realm, and the goals of the public art to establish guidelines and procedures for proposed art. RAP staff is recommending that public art only be approved on a temporary basis for an installation period of 12 months to 5 years. And the proposed art must serve a recreational purpose that is in line with RAP's mission, vision, and values. Public art should also create opportunities for community engagement and for the park and the surrounding community. Under the new policy, monuments, plaques, and signage acting as a memorial marker of an event or person will not be permitted. The proposed policy details various guidelines and criteria for all artwork on RAP property and additional requirements for specific art mediums. All future installations under this policy will be required to sign an artist waiver, and applicants will be asked to commit to maintain the artwork for the duration of the installation. If the artwork is not sufficiently maintained, then staff will remove the artwork. As part of the policy, staff is recommending that an application fee be required to cover a portion of staff costs for the review and processing of applications, and a fee to cover future costs of the removal of the artwork by RAP staff will also be required prior to the issuance of the right of entry permit for installation. The policy also provides additional information about the city's permanent art collection and how to proceed with the removal of public art from RAP property. RAP would like to thank the Department of Cultural Affairs staff for their assistance and helpful advice during the drafting and review of RAP's art policy. Following the adoption of this policy, RAP staff will work to identify unpermitted artwork on RAP property and bring those installations into compliance with this policy. This concludes my report.
Thank you. And just for the public record, Deputy Mayor Jacqueline Hamilton did review this art policy and was part of the discussion. So I just wanted to have that as part of the public record. But with that, are there any questions or comments from the commission? I see Marie.
The two comments. The first is on page 5 and section 5. Is that the right one that I'm looking for? Yes. So I just want to make aware that during our task force meeting on this, we did receive public comment associated with the amount of the fee. I am in agreement with staff that I do think that it should be the $500 so that there is some real kind of oomph behind it. That said, I am curious and debating if an application needs to be resubmitted, if we should do an additional $500 fee, or if we have the ability to waive that fee should we want to.
For the same applicant.
Yeah.
Sorry, so just to clarify. So in the instance that an applicant submits a proposal, we reject it.
Yes.
But then they submit something that's substantially similar or substantially different for staff to review.
So for it says here, once RAP staff rejects a public art application, said proposal shall not be evaluated any further unless the applicant submits a substantially revised public art proposal and pays the required application fee. I just would like us to consider that in a substantially, you know, new, that maybe we could waive the additional fee.
What would your threshold be for substantially, or sorry, in your mind, what would warrant a waiver of that fee?
I think because the public comment was a fear that the fee is so large, I just want to have us have the ability to be able to waive that fee should we think it's appropriate at the time.
Let me ask a different question to you if I could. Under what conditions do we think or anticipate that a proposal that's been submitted by an artist who's paid the fee would be denied?
If the location is not optimal, the content's not optimal, I mean, the council officer community isn't supportive of the installation, if we don't think we could, if it interferes with, you know, any of the existing areas of play or path of travel, it kind of just depends on a case-by-case basis.
So what is the process by which an artist would initiate exploration of an art installation in one of our parks?
They would submit the unofficial application that we have available on the website.
And the unofficial application doesn't come with a fee?
It does not, no.
Okay.
Because we don't have an adopted policy.
So there is a process that they begin with so that they're not going blind and submitting an application that would be denied. So there's an opportunity for them to have some guidance from park staff before an official application is submitted and they pay the fee?
Typically, no, since we are not a department that is actively soliciting artwork or art proposals. They usually have to come with us with something that's pretty fully formed, and then we'll give guidance on an actual proposal. We don't offer assistance and being like, we think this wall would be best.
No. I'm not suggesting that.
Okay,
I'm saying that an artist, so maybe ask the question differently. So the process is, I'm an artist and I say, wow, Baldwin Hills Park, you know, I have some tie to Baldwin Hills Park and I want to put something up in the park. I just draw that up. And then do I call Park and Recs and say, you know, I have this proposal, I'd like for you to review the proposal to see if it meets within your art guidelines, or are there some guidelines that the applicant is able to look at so that they're not just going blind? Because I think the concern that I'm hearing from the commissioner is that
if an artist submits an application blindly without some form of guidance and that application is denied, then they're going to get feedback. And then they have to resubmit something that could be substantially
$500
with another $500. So I think I'm hearing that there needs to be some guidance given to the artist at the beginning. And I guess the question is there guidance given to the artist in terms of the parameters under which we would approve that piece of art? Is the application clear enough to say, here are the things you can do?
I think it is. Yeah. I mean, we have an unadopted policy that we sort of use as vague guidelines. Right now, it's really difficult to enforce anything since we don't have an adopted policy. So people propose things that are not within the policy, and we don't really know what to do with them because it's not something we typically deal with. You know what I mean? So, but like the purpose of this policy is to tell you, like, if you are going to do a mural, do it on this type of wall. Make sure it doesn't obstruct these things. If you're looking at a monument, make sure it doesn't impact these kind of things.
Okay.
But we're really open to like whatever they want to give us. I'm a history major. I do not have a background in art. So I would be very hesitant to ever tell an artist like your art should look like this.
No, I'm not suggesting that.
And I agree with you that it's within the policy, but that's why my piece of if it's rejected and then, you know, they still care enough to make the changes that they want us to do. I just want to give us the ability to waive that fee should it be a financial burden and we still think this piece of art is worthwhile in pursuing.
Okay, I got you. Yes, in the instance where we're like, we see the potential and we just want some clarification on your application, we would send them a correspondence asking for that clarification, and that would all be part of the same application. We would reject it if, you know, they responded to that clarification, we were not satisfied with whatever their answer is, and then we would officially send a formal rejection.
Yes.
No, yeah, if we're asking for more info, we're not going to charge you every $500 every time just to talk to us.
Perfect. And there are guidelines to guide them for that first submission.
Yes.
Yeah. Commissioner Hutton? Oh, I have one more.
But it's on page 7. Page 7, section B. For this one, I very much appreciate that we are looking for our community engagement element of this art policy. I also just want clarification that it says here, applicant to include members of the surrounding community in the creative and installation process. I would love it to read more as like a, you know, community notification and support. I don't know if we want necessarily the community to be a part of the creative process. Am I making sense on kind of that point?
I'm sorry, I'm trying to think of like how you edit that.
I just don't want it to be art by committee. I want it to be an artist who is submitting something and then gaining local community support.
So Morgan, what was the objective in that line? Was the concern to ensure that the community has bought in to what's being proposed?
That is, yes, correct. So even if I guess the artists were to go to the community with something more fully formed versus like, we're going to collaborate together, what type of elements would you want to see in this art proposal? We still want the community to have seen it and comment.
But this, it says, you know, participate in its ultimate creation, contribute to the initial design. You know, to me, it's more of going to, I think, the intention here, which is the community engagement element. I just don't want an artist to read this and say, oh, I have to do, you know, art by committee.
No, that's not the intent. The intent, right. Even if the artist goes to the community with something more fully formed and then he get the, you know, comments of, I like the butterfly, I don't like the basketball. Is in our minds sufficient.
Could we adjust that language to be more clear that we want community input prior to approval of the application?
Community support.
That is part of the application because there is a community input.
But I think in terms of the language, that we're clear that right now the language per Commissioner Lloyd's comments is that it's an engaged process in terms of the overall design as opposed to community support for what's being submitted.
Yeah. Okay. I will, the conclusions combo, draft something together real fast and I can come back and give you something.
I'm ready to move forward and approve. Yeah. I just want to if we can make some slight changes that say essentially secure, you know, community support and not necessarily in input contribute to initial design or in creative process.
Commissioner Lloyd, do you want to read that section into the public record and then just make a suggestion and alternative language?
Thank you. So it says, in order to prioritize community-driven public art, RAP will require the applicant to include members of the surrounding community in the creative and installation process. Residents in close proximity to the site of public art proposal must be allowed to contribute to the initial design of the artwork, as well as participate in its ultimate creation, while being overseen and supervised by the applicant or professional artist spearheading the artwork. The applicant should describe how the public art will meet the community engagement requirement. For me, I would say, in order to prioritize community-driven public art, RAP will require the applicant to secure support of members of the surrounding community, and residents in close proximity to the site of public art proposal must be allowed to
review,
thank you, the initial design of the artwork, as well as I think just initial design of the artwork, while being overseen and supervised by the applicant or the professional artist spearheading the artwork.
Good.
You know, in secure support, I wonder if maybe instead solicit feedback, would that satisfy you?
That absolutely satisfies me.
Good job, Steve.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you.
And that's exactly my intention there. Yeah.
Thank you. Commissioner Hutton?
Mine was just surely educational and something. So on application of the criteria, when we talked about recreational purpose, so if you had a sculpture, so we won't have like a monolith. What's an example of a sculpture that has a recreational purpose?
It's difficult to identify.
Running?
She said she was a history major, not an art major.
The reason I asked this question is just some of the things that have come through since my term on the commission, and I'm applying like what's come through. So my two questions were on that, because I'm thinking of the Venice sculpture, right, as an example, because we had to deal with that. And it's, I don't know that it's recreation oriented. People aren't climbing on it or doing whatever. And we don't want people climbing on public art necessarily. And the second piece is just understanding the plaques, because we've had plaques come through here, memorial plaques for people who have served, community members or have served. Mm-hmm. And I think that is not applicable anymore. So I just want to make sure I understand that.
Yeah. Of course. So for sculptures, like, we are hesitant to tell people what they can't do. So we understand that sculptures may present challenges that murals or mosaic murals and things that would more easily kind of work in a community environment, or like where you have the events where, you know, you have the kids paint the different parts of the mosaics and then the artist puts them together. We understand that like a sculpture may present potential challenges, but if an artist came with that to us with a proposal that somehow worked with the creation of a sculpture that the community was able to work on together, there was some community event that had a recreational component around that, we would be willing to hear it. I have not in my mind's eye imagined what that would look like in the context of a sculpture, but we want to leave it open for artists to propose something. That's the, I know, is that helpful?
Is it a guide? It's guidance versus a mandate. However, we don't need basketballs and soccer balls and hockey sticks or, you know, whatever it is for every piece of art that's part of our program and our property. Right? So the question here is it restrictive, or should it be more based on community art that's more applicable given the context that we can evaluate, versus putting guardrails around it must have some recreational purpose or related to just anything recreational?
I mean, that's my thought on it is I think there's some, I don't want to inadvertently eliminate some really beautiful public art that could get placed in our community. And when I think about it, like a recreational purpose, you know, it could be a bronze structure of a basketball, right? But I'm also thinking
We have water in our parks. We have trees. We have open space for people to play. And is there a way, would the criteria as written right now eliminate that? Or is there something, a tweak to it that needs to be made so it's, you know, recreational purpose or like parks reflective or something like that? So, because if I read it right now and I'm a sculptor, I'm like, I've got to do a basketball or I've got to have something that people
want. Or, but could recreational purposes be a statue of P22?
We have a mural that was approved with P22. So presumably, yes. So but also just also to clarify, in the instance that a sculptor is looking at doing a significant piece that probably would outlast the 5-year installation period, that is a piece that we would direct to go through the Department of Cultural Affairs and be considered as a permanent installation so that it would be properly maintained. It would be vetted through their process with their art lens, which I don't have. So we would direct them to go to Department of Cultural Affairs because they're better equipped to evaluate those types of proposals and tell us whether they would be sustainable for a park installation.
But I would think recreational is not sports. Recreation is much broader.
Recreational also, it doesn't strictly mean like subject matter. For us, all of our recreational programs are about communities and building engagement. So like, we just want to see more engagement in the creation of the art, even if the art subject matter doesn't necessarily have a recreational sports
topic. Satisfy my concerns by putting just any clarification into that policy where we define recreational with like a parentheses that goes sports, walking, outdoor enjoyment, something like that. So we're making sure people don't look through only through a sports lens at it. Or am I being?
Yeah, I think recreational is much broader than sports. I mean, recreation
Wait,
is
city attorney's trying to jump in here.
But recreation, I think, is picnicking. It's, yeah. I mean, nature. When you think of the vast nature, when you think of the vast network of our, you know, park systems, and I mean, recreational is the Griffith Observatory. It's the Venice Skate Park. I mean, so I see recreation as much broader than sports.
Well, I have one example, or what if there was a community leader or Martin Luther King?
I think that would fit within the policy.
That would be,
as I read it,
within the guidelines.
A mural of Martin Luther King.
Technically, that memorial or that mural would memorialize a person or event that may not have a direct connection to the park, unless you do it at MLK Park. So, also the intent of a memorial or marker of a person would be to outlast a temporary installation. So that is another thing we would direct to the Department of Cultural Affairs to help commission. So it could be on our property in perpetuity as a long-term installation, because
it would go
Martin through Luther King is going to stay significant for more than 5 years.
I also think a good example of what we're debating here is something we actually approved in our last meeting, which was the stencils at MacArthur Park, which were about kind of community driven, the area, whatever it may be, that didn't necessarily have a depiction in recreation as we see it, but was more about community building. And so I think hits the concerns you have, but isn't necessarily a memorial of a person.
Yeah, because that organization, which their name is escaping me right now, they're very involved in the MacArthur Park community. They've done a lot of events. They've had multiple art proposals over the years. So we know that they're talking to the community. So we were, you know, okay with the depictions that they came up with for those stencils. And yes, so be representative of the community.
Yeah, no, I think it's very important to set. I mean, we're publishing guidelines, people will follow it.
Yep.
And they might follow it to the word unless they're explained. So it's very difficult for an artist to interpret with no direction, and the one is direction to follow it. So I just want to make sure that there's flexibility in terms of creativity when it comes to the art assets on our properties. I think that's what the concern is, right? Because everyone looks for direction if they have all direction. So
Commissioner Hutton, what section were you referencing?
Was criteria page 4, section 5.2.
Could you read that for me, please?
Public art rep goals for public art. Public art installations shall serve a recreational purpose in line with RAP's mission, vision, and values.
What if we just have it say public art installations should be in line with RAP's mission, vision, and values?
That would be quite happy.
That was literally what I should align with.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And
just remove the with recreational purpose.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Thank you for listening to my concerns. I appreciate it.
We did discuss a lot of the scenarios. You all
we went through. Yeah.
Back, what does this have? But I think part of it is we're trying to just figure out what is our lane as RAP,
yes,
and what is our lane as cultural affairs, right? Being very good, because right now for an artist, it's hard to navigate.
And I'm so sorry. What was the specific question about the memorial plaque policy?
The memorial. We've had several memorial plaque applications come through since we've been on the commission, commemorating
right.
people that have long-term community members, volunteers, or service to the city, and they've been placed at parks. They've been on benches, trees, things like that. Maybe probably just benches. So is that eliminated in this program?
Yes. So those, again, would be directed to the Department of Cultural Affairs because yep. memorial marker, long-term, more than 5 years.
All right, great. Any other comments, questions? Okay, thank you.
So I acknowledge the task force and staff. This probably took, this is the first time we've done this, correct? So
I would be lying if this is the first draft we've ever prepared
on this podcast. To go through policy and to think through the 25 million applications of it. So I just want to acknowledge the time and effort. And, you know, if we have to do tweaks to it, we'll do tweaks to it later. You know, we don't have to be perfect 24/7. So I just, the intent was great and the work went into it. So thank you.
And both the Department of Recreation and staff and Cultural Affairs, and again, I know the Deputy Mayor Jeff and Hamilton weighed in as well, so appreciate the iterations and the patience of getting the policy to this point.
I'm so excited. So excited. You don't even know. anything else?
No, that's it. Thank awesome. You so much. Thank you. So our last item is item 211, Griffith Observatory.
Yay to space.
Start. Thank you. President Semerill, commissioners, executive staff, and general manager Kim, and of course, everyone present here today. Good morning. I'm Ed Krupp, director of Griffith Observatory. I'm joined this morning by Julie LaCouture, who is the interim executive director of Griffith Observatory Foundation. And I am presenting this board report for a proposed partnership agreement, which requires board's support for the fabrication and installation and then donation of a new exhibit, Celestial Globe, at Griffith Observatory. And also, as part of this board report, it requires the board to approve the exemption from the CEQA requirement. And if the board has any detailed questions about the exhibit, I'll be happy to answer them. It is a spectacular exhibit intended to demonstrate our archaic bond with one of our most prized cultural heritages, the constellations of the night sky, and relies upon our earliest depiction of those constellations, which comes from ancient Rome. And our exhibit, in fact, derives from that, with depictions of the constellations that, in fact, rely on those images.
Thank you. Questions or comments from the commission?
We're very appreciative of the foundation for closing this budget gap on such a long process of trying to have this exhibit. Can you speak a little bit more about kind of the, I don't know, curatorial process between the department and the foundation when we seek outside funding to get an exhibit like this?
I believe I can answer your question correctly. Observatory staff is generally responsible for identifying the priorities of the observatory's objectives as a premier institution of public astronomy. And in this particular case, the The exhibit was part of the original plan for the renovation and expansion of Griffith Observatory, but in fact, time, circumstance, and of course, money prevented our including that. So the concept was developed originally by observatory staff in conjunction with the exhibit designers at that time, but was not carried any further than that. Once sufficient time had passed and we realized we could move along or at least attempt to move along on this, observatory staff in particular was responsible for developing the basic outline for this. And then subsequently that required making contact with the designer that could translate that idea into at least a conceptual sensibility of what this should look like. And that has continued through the design process to the extent that we actually have drawings that indicate size, weight, and how the whole thing is supposed to go together.
Okay.
The continuing involvement of observatory staff will not only be related to actually getting this thing into place, but also then the interpretive materials that have to accompany it. We have a museum guide staff who will daily be able to point to elements of the exhibit and the constellations that are on it. It will be rotating in place. And so there will also be waysides that we shall be designing and then carrying forward in terms of execution.
How do we plan for future exhibits? And I ask this because obviously Griffith Observatory and, you know, the experience within it is such an important part of our city. And, you know, if there are high costs associated with having quality exhibits and understanding our budget constraints, you know, how do we work? Is it with the foundation or others to think about ongoing exhibits and changes and fulfilling those funding gaps to support it?
I believe I can answer your question, at least anecdotally. The fact is Griffith Observatory does not create new exhibits on an ongoing basis. When we carried out the $93 million renovation and expansion, understanding that floor space alone was limited at the observatory. It's a postage stamp piece of property with 1.6 million people a year. It's kind of incredible. But that meant that, and as well as I think your concern about how you maintain a budget profile over the years, the exhibit program at that time was in fact designed to last for decades.
Okay.
And the content is evergreen content. It is the kind of thing, despite revolutions in astronomy, it's the kind of thing that is.
And it's Pluto a planet or not, you know, lots can change.
We were ready for that.
I think it is. I'm going with Pluto as a planet.
Well, as long as that issue has emerged, I can assure you that we were quite concerned about the matter and anticipated it because we were undergoing design at that time and concluded that whether Pluto is a planet or not, it is always welcome at Griffith Observatory. And so, in fact, it is present, unlike New York's Hayden Rose Center for Earth and Space, I might add.
But, I'm excited to hear that.
But I do want to add that the observatory does undertake more modest operations, and we had the very good fortune in just recent time to receive on essentially long-term indefinite loan the only meteorite known to have hit the ground in the municipality of Los Angeles. And internally, the observatory staff designed the exhibit case for that, designed the interpretive materials for that, the lighting for it, and all. It's obviously modest by comparison to the current endeavor, and installed that, and it's in place now on the edge of space at Griffith Observatory. So we do things internally with our own resources, but major operations like this, they are infrequent, but they occur from time to time. And when they're major, we have to turn to the foundation for that kind of support. And the foundation has been absolutely side by side with us from the beginning. We could not have even begun this had not the foundation made the commitment to go out and seek the funds and get them and then let us get started.
Great. I just want to make sure you're all getting what you need.
Yeah, we are.
Thank you, Commissioner Lloyd. Commissioner Hutton?
had a couple questions, and I promised they will lead to something bigger in it. So 800 pounds, the circumference is?
About 4 feet.
About 4 feet. So it's small, like 4 feet, but 800 pounds.
Yeah, a little bigger than that, but yeah.
It's going to be hanging inside between two areas.
It will be in
old
a,
and new.
It is to be located on a pole in the gap that is in the area of gravity stairway that leads from the historic level down to the center of gravity. Yeah, which is farther down. And I think you're probably referencing the remarkable physical demands there, which not only include holding an 800-pound piece of equipment up in the air, but it rotates as well. And so significant engineering, of course, had to go into this and has been undertaken as part of the project and has, in fact, been reviewed, of course, by Building and Safety and the other agencies.
My only thing is I just love when we can toot our horn at our department for the really cool things we're funding and installing, especially when they're permanent. And we often get heads down in like safety and installation. When we have options like this, encouraging like us to think with the foundation about how we can do some very creative endeavors towards the rollout, not just the installation itself. But I think there's a lot of fun stuff they can do with donors for the foundation, previews, like visits to the globe before it gets installed. There's a whole suite of things that could be done that I just encourage us to think through to get people excited because we do have things coming in so infrequently that we celebrate them in creative ways.
I couldn't agree more, and I believe Julie would agree as well. And I should mark at this point in reference to your comment, we regard the completion and installation of the celestial globe as one of the prominent but not only the only showstopper. We intend for 2025, which is Griffith Observatory's 90th year, the 90th anniversary. And so we intend an entire year of events that relate to that, very much shepherded by the foundation, who I feel certain will follow your guidance in terms of the kinds of previews and promotions that you just described.
Well, Ed, thank you. And Ed and Julie, let the record reflect that Commissioner Hutton has volunteered to be a thought partner.
Super.
Actually, I'm with that too.
You're on.
I think those are our only items. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, may I have a motion to approve items 207 and 211?
Motion to approve said item.
May I have a second?
Second.
And just for the record, item 207 will be adopted per the recommended language changes. Okay. So I have a motion and a second. Takesha, can you call for the vote?
Will do, Madam President. We have a motion and a second to approve Board Reports 24-207 with the recommended changes and Board Report 24-211. Commissioner Tran, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Hutton, how do you vote?
Aye.
Vice President Sanchez, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Lloyd, how do you vote?
Aye.
President Simrell, how do you vote?
Aye.
And the motion carried.
Thank you. Are there any neighborhood council comments?
I have not received any such requests.
Let's give a round of applause for the art policy. Well done. Do the chairs of the chairpersons of each task force, are there any task force updates? Task force updates?
Oh, sorry. We talked about Rancho. Concessions task force. I want to thank. We had quite a large crowd of residents that use the Rancho golf course quite extensively. I think we've reported on that and the sense of urgency on that. And then I also just want to acknowledge our team from the observatory is here, and we have made a decision to purchase the telescopes at the observatory. They will be there permanently and they will be free now. We are not using quarters, the antiquated, but we decided those are a very important feature. I my kids going there and looking out there
guideline. So that was exciting. So thank you.
Very good. Thank you. All right. Any comments from the commissioners on future agendized items or report backs within the board's jurisdiction?
Can we understand what the public comment was on Jackie Robinson and a possible stabbing of one of our staff members? Yeah, thank you.
Anything else? Okay, hearing none. The next meeting is scheduled for Thursday, October 17th at 9 a.m. We'll be at Glassau Park Recreation Center, 3640 Verdugo Road in Los Angeles, 90065. This meeting is now adjourned. Thanks, everyone, for being here and for your participation.